Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us. Today's episode is sponsored by Harkla, a company that makes high-quality products for everyday use. This includes sensory and therapy equipment and products as well as supplements. The owners, Casey and Amelia, are local to Boise, which make this even cooler for us since they're local to us.
Harkla is a company on a mission. They donate 1% of each month's sales to the University of Washington Autism Center, which funds cutting-edge research and sponsors scholarships for children with autism to attend a summer camp.
Stay tuned to hear more later in the episode, as well as to get a special discount.
Okay, let's get started.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Sensory Project Show. This is episode 136.
And we are Rachel and Jessica. Thank you so much for being here. If you're new, welcome. If you are one of our lifers, we're so excited to have you back. Today we are talking with Rachel. She's an occupational therapist from New Zealand.
And Rachel's goal on Instagram primarily is to help parents of preschoolers holistically balance screens and play. And so we learned a ton of information from her today, and we're really excited to share everything that she has created and all of her knowledge with you guys today.
It's a really fun conversation, so let's jump in.
So excited to see you guys.
Yes.
I kind of know you from Instagram, you know, it's so awesome.
I know, I feel the same way. It's so funny when you meet someone like online after
virtually
talking to them on the internet. It's like, oh, I already know you.
I know. Yeah, funny that, eh?
It's perfect. Well, we're really happy that you're here talking to us almost in real life.
Yeah, same. It's exciting times.
Okay, so we have five secret questions to ask you before we talk about all the other things.
Yes.
Classic. Okay.
All right, the first one, would you rather rake leaves all day or carve pumpkins all day?
Oh, I definitely like to rake leaves. That gives me a bit of satisfaction to clear up the environment.
There you go. I love it.
I said the raking the leaves as well because, I don't know, I feel like I would just get really bored of carving pumpkins all day.
Yeah, and it's like a bit messy, you know. Yeah.
I could decide. I don't know. I don't know what I would do. I'm just going to not decide.
Oh, you're just not going to participate?
No.
Fair enough.
Okay, our second question for you is, what is something that not very many people know about you?
Oh, what is something that not very many people know about me? Well, before I did my occupational therapy training, I actually did a diploma in therapeutic and sports massage as well.
Okay.
And I never worked as a massage therapist because I found it quite hard on my body.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah. So not many people know that about me, but it's just one of those things that I've got tucked under my belt that I've never actually used in practice.
But you have the education to do it should the situation arise.
Absolutely, yeah. Brings another layer to life.
That's true.
Yes. I love it.
That's true.
All right, next question. What is the first thing that you do when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, well, I'd like to say I go and have a lovely breakfast with my kids, but I don't. I go on my phone.
Like the one thing that we're told not to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, my husband and I have quite a good, like, co-parenting. You know, we share the load quite a lot. So breakfast is his duty with the kids, and it's been like that for a long time because, you know, I've been a stay-at-home mum for years before, and so I was kind of like, well, I get to spend all day with them, darling, so yes. How about you do breakfast and then I can come after I've had my shower and I'm feeling like I can parent really well. So yeah, it works for us.
I like it. Good.
That's awesome.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. If you could travel anywhere with money not being an issue, where would you go?
Oh, that is an amazing question. Somewhere hot. You know, we live down the bottom of the world and it's quite cold where we are.
Oh, really?
So we get those Antarctic winds that blow up straight into our town here in Christchurch.
Oh, man.
And so I'd love to just go somewhere hot around the equator. I don't know, like the Greek islands, you know, with those beautiful blue seas. That's always fun to me.
Yes.
So do you guys have a summer? Like, what's the warmest that it gets?
Yeah, we do. We have four quite clear seasons here in the South Island of New Zealand, and it's really lovely because, you know, the seasons are very defined with that beautiful autumn, fall, and then, but in winter, it doesn't snow much in Christchurch, hardly ever, in fact, but we get very, very cold winds, which is not that nice.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a silly question, but what season are you in now? Were you? I'm like, I feel like our seasons are probably different, right? What season are you in right now?
Yeah, so I think we're just the opposite to you. So we are in spring, almost about to head into summer.
Okay, you are opposite of us. That's so weird. That's so weird.
I need to get out more.
So weird.
Yeah, so we have that thing of our Christmas is in the middle of summer. And so we have the warm Christmas, which I know is quite an odd concept for lots of people from the Northern Hemisphere, right?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Well, because it's still October. Right? You could consider it October, but it's just spring. October is spring and April is fall.
Yeah. Jeez, that's right. Weird. Yeah. I've actually always wanted to have a snowy Christmas, a white Christmas. I've never had a white Christmas.
Come to
that's on my bucket list as well.
Oh. Yeah, come to Boise, Idaho, and you will.
Totally, yeah.
And then we'll come visit you in the summertime, which is the winter. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds perfect.
Okay, good.
I just like an endless year-long of summer anyway. Oh, so, you know, traveling the world, having a year-long of summer is actually quite a dream of mine.
Chasing summer?
Yes.
Oh, that's like my dream life.
Yeah, it is. She's a big travel bug. I'm not as into it. I mean, I would like to, but I'm not good at it. I pack too heavy.
Oh.
I get too nervous flying.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Anyway, it's a total dream at the moment. Anyway, is it? Isn't it? So, yeah, let's just all stay at home.
Yeah.
All right, we have one more question.
Okay. Our favorite question. What is your sensory quirk?
Oh, yeah, true. My sensory quirk. Well, I really am struggling with loud noises at the moment, which as a mum of four is quite hard to handle.
Yeah.
So I have to be quite aware of that and just make sure I do, you know, take my time away.
Yes.
Self-care as a mum and be able to handle that in a way that doesn't set me off and trigger me with my kids.
Yes. Good for you for recognizing that, though.
Totally.
And I think it is kind of like, well, it doesn't really make me much of a fun mum because I don't really take them to like big shows or, you know, those kind of like big agricultural shows or fun fairs and stuff like that because it's such a sensory overwhelming environment for me. But, you know, that's okay. They're still young. They don't really need much of that at the moment.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So now that everyone knows all of your deepest, darkest secrets, tell us what you do, why you do it, how you do it, all the things.
Yeah, so, you know, you would have heard or read in the intro, I'm an occupational therapist. I'm also a mum of four, and my background in occupational therapy has been mental health and addictions. So mum, I'm quite aware about screen time and how addicting it is for children, well, also for adults, you know, as us as parents as well. And so when I had my children, I really struggled to maintain that balance of play time and screen time for them. And I think as a health professional, that really weighed on me because I was very much aware of what the evidence shows for screen time for kids and also as an OT, what the amazing benefits of play are, and just realizing that, you know, the more time they spend on screens, the less time they spend in play. And I feel like there wasn't a lot of
the worst.
And so I've made it my mission to provide that practical support for parents, and I do that by sharing lots of information about play and how to extend play for your children and how to understand play in the home environment. Mm-hmm. And then as a result of that, it means that we're less reliant on screens.
Yes, which I think it is such an important topic. We've done a podcast episode on screen time, but we haven't talked with anyone who, you know, is so committed to this area and can really shed light on how important it is to just, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but just, you know, kind of transition away from screens and find that balance.
Yeah, and it is a balance, and I don't feel like it's helpful to say to parents, you know, like, just have no screen time, because it's kind of not really realistic.
Yeah.
Or just turn off the TV, or just take the iPad away, because then you get the whole resulting meltdowns. And so how do parents deal with that, and how do we support parents to deal with that, and then that detox period for children, because it is a detox, because mm-hmm. it's an addiction really, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk a little bit more about that and the addiction, and how long kids should be on the screens and what that detox looks like.
So, you know, the evidence is quite clear in that for preschoolers, especially from the, you know, newborn to age five, that the more screen time they have, the worse health outcomes they have. You know, it's really quite clear that they spend more time at the doctors, more time with incidences of illness. They have a higher risk of obesity. You know, I'm not saying that your kids will end up with obesity, but it's just being aware of those actual health outcomes that are shown in the literature for the age 0 to 5. And so, you know, there's quite clear guidelines from governments around the world, including the Ministry of Health here in New Zealand, and also the American Academy of Pediatrics, and they say, you know, no screen time for under twos. It's very clear, as well as an hour in New Zealand for age two to five, and up to 2 hours is what the American Academy of Pediatrics say for their guidelines. But yeah, so the detox period is real for that when you are transitioning away from screens, and it requires a lot of energy as a parent to be able to handle that, to be able to give your children the connection that they need, because they're connecting with the screen and they're going to be wanting to connect with you instead, because that's their primary form of attachment. You're their primary form of attachment. And the detox period does take a while, you know, and I don't like to give like actual days or weeks or anything like that, because it totally depends on the family mm-hmm. and how much energy they have to put into this particular lifestyle change.
It is so interesting, because we all know, we've all heard, you know, about the research of how it affects our brains and the different chemicals that are released when we're on a screen, and why it's addicting because of those chemicals.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And you know, with that dopamine hit that we get when we're on screens mm-hmm. as parents, you know, we are so aware of it, you know, with the old Facebook like button and notifications, and that's what's happening in our brains with the chemical release of dopamine, the feel-good factor. And it's quite scary for us as parents. And I know that, you know, for this particular age range that we're talking about, for preschoolers, they're not necessarily getting that same kind of, like, they don't go and strive for the Facebook likes and all that kind of stuff, because they're not on Facebook, preschoolers. But there is the fact that there's YouTube, and we're letting our kids constantly watch the recurring Netflix videos. And, you know, these programs have been designed to keep us on screens. Mm-hmm. And so as parents, it is very easy to just be like, oh, well, just another 20 minutes of Daniel Tiger or whatever. And it is hard to break that cycle.
Mm-hmm. I actually just watched The Social Dilemma on Netflix.
Yes.
And
yes, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, it blows my mind of how these companies, these big companies, are literally like just messing with our minds so much. And you don't think about it unless you take a step back and actually look at it and say, oh my gosh, I tap my phone to see if there's any notifications however many times a day. Like you thrive on those notifications. And I have mine all turned off, because I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't want to see them. I don't want that in my mind. And so I just thought that little snippet of adults and social media is so eye-opening that it's probably worse for kids.
I even think about with adults too, is like, how many of us take our phone into the bathroom when we go to the bathroom, yeah, right? Because we like can't be away from it, uh-huh, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is quite sobering, isn't it? And I don't feel like it needs to be approached by a place of fear for us as parents with our children. I feel like it needs to be approached from a place of being informed and actually making informed decisions, because as parents, you know, we all want the best for our kids, but it's so hard to navigate about what is the actual evidence and what is the actual advice and guidelines, mm-hmm, that are coming out about it. And teenagers are a whole different ball game, you know, like they're being given phones, which is fine because they need to keep in contact with their friends or whatever, and so that's a whole different kettle of fish, and the evidence isn't quite as clear about the length of time that teenagers, I don't like to say should, but the guidelines around the amount of hours per day. But, you know, for the younger age group, I feel like it's very clear with the evidence. And parents need a lot of support in this time, because it's really, really hard to be a parent of a preschooler. They're really intense. And where is that support? Where is that practical support around being able to set up the home environment for play, being able to look after your own self-care while you are detoxing your children from screens, being aware of how to connect with them after they've gone off their screen time, you know? It's quite a, there are a lot of factors to it, and it needs to have a real holistic approach to that support.
Yeah. And I feel like there's so much judgment too that goes into it. Let's say if I were to tell someone, yeah, we're not doing any screen time, you know, we're limiting our screen time. I feel like there's so much judgment as to, well, why are you doing that? Well, are you judging me for not doing that with my kiddo? And it's such an uncomfortable topic.
Yeah, it is uncomfortable. And for a long time, I've been passionate about this for a long time, but I didn't share a lot about it for a long time, because there is that whole kind of, well, don't tell me what to do with my kids, and, you know, and I'll do this in my life and you do that in yours. And yes, that's fine. I think that it's really important to realize that every family is different. But as an occupational therapist, we can help individual families to create solutions that are personalized for their families. It's what we do. And so it's part of our responsibility, I feel, to address screen time, because it's such a huge part in day-to-day life for parenting these days, and actually help parents and not be just another expert, using quotation marks here, who like tells parents what to do without actually giving them the support and practical resources to make changes in their everyday life.
Yeah.
We all have the same end goal, is to make these children and these families as happy and live their life to the fullest. I mean, that's occupational therapy in a nutshell. So that's one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And because I feel like the issue of screen time is so multi-layered, you know, there's all sorts of different contexts. There's like giving your kids screen time because maybe you, as yourself, have got postpartum depression, you know, that needs to be taken into account. Mm-hmm. Mother's mental health is massive, and we can't expect parents to be making huge changes in their life if they've got multiple stressors on them from other reasons. Maybe dad's just lost his job. Maybe mum's just lost her job. Maybe they've got a family member who's sick. Maybe they've got a child who's sick. Maybe they're living in poverty. Maybe they haven't got a bag yet. Maybe they live in an apartment. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different layers to it. Yeah. And it's really quite hard just to say, like, this is what parents should be doing, you know, when we see those screen time guidelines, without taking into consideration all of the different layers and contexts that there are to the family life.
Yeah. I have a question. So what are your thoughts on using screen time as a reward?
Yeah, I personally am not a fan of it. I feel like it takes away from that intrinsic motivation that we have. Are we trying to instill in our children to do things around the home as part of family life for other reasons other than screen time. That's my personal opinion on it as someone who has a background in mental health and addictions and parenting. Mm-hmm. But in reality, once again, I'm saying that we need to find out what works for individual families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just thinking of
individual children as well, you know. Individual children are all motivated by different things, and it's about digging deeper and finding out what that meaningful occupation is for them. Again, OT coming through
here. Yeah.
As to what is the reward, you know, like maybe the reward could be replaced by what is the child's love language? Maybe it needs to be something to do with that. Like,
oh, I'd love that.
Quality time with a parent or a love affirmation note in their lunchbox or something like that.
Totally. I know. I was just thinking about my kid. He's 6. Well, he'll be 7 when this podcast comes out. And so I was just thinking about, like, do I use screen time as a reward? Like, how much screen time is he getting? Like, totally judging myself right now.
It's certainly, I reflect on it a lot as well, obviously, because we have 4 children of different ages, and my eldest is just about to turn 8. And so, reflecting on the fact that he's a bit older now and he doesn't necessarily fit into those specific guidelines of what the evidence shows for screen time. And so what does that mean for our children as they get older? When, as parents who live a limited screen lifestyle, like what do we do for our older children when we want to ease them into screens, or we're ready to expose them to more screens, for example?
How do you set guidelines for your kids then? For your children?
Yes. Well, we recognize in our house that it's always changing. So that's one thing I also coach parents on, is that just because you've created a specific screen time agreement in your house for this particular time doesn't mean that it's going to change, not going to change in the future, you know? We need to recognize that life goes through different ages and stages. And so for a lot of our last 3 years, we have had very limited screen time at the point where we can go like 1 or 2 weeks without much screen time. But we also have had a new baby in the house for the last year. And so, you know, we have had more screen time for that. We try not to maybe let screen time more than 2 or 3 times a week and no more than an hour at a time, just because we do still have preschoolers in the house. But certainly as our baby grows, she's almost a year now, and so she can crawl and she can come and watch the TV and that kind of thing. And so I'm very aware that I don't want her exposed to too much screen at the moment, and so we are constantly reassessing about what the older kids are having and how that impacts on the youngest child in our family.
Mm-hmm.
So you do a lot of educating your older kiddos as to what the impacts of screen time are.
Yeah, that's right. So we do have discussions. You know, it's I feel like I'm answering your question in such a roundabout way, but you know, that's what I mean about there's so many different ways.
Exactly. Well, we're kind of putting you on the spot right now.
Yeah, but we've often had discussions in our house with our kids from a very young age about the reason why we don't have too much screen time, because they are asking those questions, you know, from a young age, you know, like 3, can I have TV? No, son, sorry, you can't at the moment, because play is better for your brain than TV is. We keep it really simple, but we do involve them in the discussion and we do talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've tried things in the past, like having a schedule, this is your TV day, that's not your TV day. And actually, at the end of the day, you know, after trying different things, we have decided that we won't have a schedule about TV, because it does get to be quite obsessive for the kids, you know.
I was just going to say.
But that's just our family, and like I say, you know, one family's solution is not going to be everybody's solution.
Totally.
But there is an interesting little piece of research that does show that families who attempt to have a schedule, they actually, the children end up being more exposed to more screen time.
I can see that just with our clients and my clients in the past, those ones who say that they're working on a schedule and they're using a schedule for their clients or for their kiddos with a screen time, they come in and they tell me how obsessed their child is about the screen. When am I going to get it tomorrow? Is it going to be today? For how long? And they can't, they're just so perseverative on it that they can't move past it. Mm-hmm. So I can see how that would be, I mean, proven by research. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that again, it brings it back to, that's bringing a stressor into the environment for the parents. And so it ends up being a sticking point, and it might end up being a trigger for the mum or the dad. And so then we're having screen time meltdowns, and we're having like tension moments between the mum or the dad and the child. And then it gets really stressful. And so that's what we're trying to remove from the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about the families who say that kids need to learn how to use technology because technology is the way of the future? And they say, well, my child needs to learn how to do all these apps and things because that's what they're going to do.
Or even if we look at how the world is right now with virtual learning and so many children having school online.
Yes, 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 see, another layer. Absolutely, absolutely. And I totally hear that from those parents as well. And I can empathize as a parent who has been worried about their child missing out on things or falling behind because they haven't had much screen time. But I think realistically, when we think about it, you know, our children live in a digital age and they grow up around devices, okay? And so they're not going to struggle to learn how to use an iPad when they finally get introduced to it at age 7, if we choose to give it to them at age 7, you know. They're going to pick it up like that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be easy for them because it's just something, devices are so intuitive to use and they're not hard. Your probably 87-year-old grandma can figure out how to use an iPad. You know, your 7-year-old who is learning and their brain is plastic is going to be able to figure it out extremely quickly, you know. And I don't feel like it's something that is talked about enough, because I feel like there's a huge pressure for parents to get their kids learning, to get them onto the learning apps, to get them onto the iPad so that they can learn to read at age 4, you know. And that's another layer to it as well. We need to reassure parents that their child isn't going to fall behind because they haven't learned how to read on an iPad at age 4. It's real-life learning is going to be able to teach them that by the time they get to the stage where they need to learn how to read, you know. It's going beyond. Is it appropriate for a 4-year-old child to be learning how to read at age 4? No, it's not needed, you know. They need to be outside, they need to be playing with blocks inside, they need to be playing role play, they need to be developing these social emotional brains at age 4. They don't need to be developing their cognitive skills and learning how to read at age 4.
Especially on a screen.
Yeah.
Yes. This is one of my little soapboxes.
Oh, yeah. Keep going, please, because I totally, totally agree. I think, yes. You know, I do have some proud moments in my parenting journey where I'm like, my kid wasn't on an iPad until maybe 4 or 5 years old, you know? And I mean, he definitely watched cartoons as a young, you know, as an infant and whatnot, but, you know, we definitely kept it to a minimum. And I'm just really thankful that I had that awareness at the time and had the ability as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, that's another layer to it, is that I think we are in very privileged positions as occupational therapists. We're trained and we know these things and it comes naturally to us, and it's part of our responsibility to actually share our knowledge so that other parents who haven't had this particular training or whatever, you know, can actually be encouraged by these stories, because there's so much pressure out there to even get your kids on screens because they might be missing out on, I don't know, all the latest fads and all that kind of stuff. But it's just not needed and it's not necessary.
No. I think some parents that, you know, I've heard from before say, well, my kid gets bored when they're not watching TV. They don't know what to do. And, you know, I'll tell them, well, that's because they need to learn how to play instead of just looking at a screen all day. And so I think there's that fear from some parents of, well, my kid won't know what to do, they'll be bored.
Yes, totally. And it's about, you know, acknowledging that. And this is a stage of change. You know, this whole moving to less screens is a lifestyle change for the whole family. It is about acknowledging that and being like, well, it's going to take a while for us to get into our new normal. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's maybe a couple of weeks and till the kids kind of settle down a bit. And we can help parents through that by giving them advice about changing the environment, about setting up little simple invitations to play, about doing simple toy rotations, about scaffolding their children into play, about connecting with their children through play. And there's so much that we can actually teach parents about this kind of thing. And the kids might complain that they'll be bored for a while, but eventually they will kind of adjust to their new normal. Yeah.
Well, and I could go on a soapbox about being bored and how it's a good thing for kids to be bored.
How often though, as adults, when we fill our white space with our phones, you know, we're just sitting there and no one, I mean, you look at the bus station, you look at the mall, you look at the grocery store, everyone driving, they're not doing something. So they automatically pull open their phone. I'm guilty of
it. Oh, for sure.
You know, we all are.
For sure.
But
And actually, you know, for us as parents, like, the phone is a really great parenting toolbox. You know, we learn so much about parenting through making connections online. I mean, look at this. We're doing this podcast now, finding out information on Instagram, which is where I've chosen to share information about screen time and play, which can be a bit ironic, but actually, yes, having the phone is a really great parenting toolbox, but we need to be able to think, well, how are we modeling to our children? I, for one, know that I really need to monitor this myself.
Me too.
Totally owning that right now.
Oh, yeah. Yes, always.
Yeah, and, you know, modeling different meaningful occupations to our children, you know, whatever it is for us. I'm not going to say that you need to go and read a book. I'm not going to say that you need to go and do a crossword or whatever, because it's totally dependent on the individual, you know.
Let's take a quick break and talk about the sponsor for today's episode, Harkla. Like we said earlier, they make high-quality products, things like sensory swings, weighted blankets, lap pads, compression sheets, body socks, all the things you guys know we love.
So we had the chance to try out a few of their products, like one of their swings and weighted blankets, and they are definitely top shelf, you guys. Their products are great. And yeah, you can go buy a sensory swing on Amazon, but when you purchase it from Harkla, you know where your money is going.
If you're a therapist looking for new products, if you're a parent and you need some new equipment for your kiddo, whoever you are, you guys have to check these guys out ASAP.
Okay, we're going to get back to the episode, but stay tuned because at the end of the episode, we're going to give you a code for a discount with these guys.
Yeah, well, let's kind of sidestep and talk about play. You're a play educator, and you mentioned invitations to play.
I loved that. I know, like having a simple invitation to play and simple toy rotations.
Yes.
Those were the things that caught my attention
when
you said them.
And I have a friend who really took interest in the invitation to play, and she set up these cute little, you know, tactile bins and wooden boxes with flower petals and stuff, and I just started following along. I'm like, that is really cool. And so if you could touch on that a little bit, that'd be awesome.
So throughout my parenting journey, I've been lucky enough to do a little bit more education for myself in early childhood, and part of that is this really cool resource we have in New Zealand called Play Centre, where you go and you hang out with your child. It's like an early childhood centre, but you're there with your child and they offer education for parents about play.
That's so amazing.
So cool.
It's really amazing. We're so lucky to have it. So through that, I have, you know, learned a lot about play, which is what I'm sharing on my social platforms about play. And it's really about identifying where your child is at in play and being able to extend on that. I feel like that's really the key. because you, the ultimate goal, let's be honest, is that your child engages in independent play. You know?
Amen.
We want that.
Yes.
We want them to be happy playing over there, so they engage in their flow of play and they're just in their zone, and we're over here having a coffee because we need it, because yes. We need a break.
Yep,
absolutely.
Yeah, so being able to set up simple invitations to play is really, really crucial with being able to transition from screen time, which is what I want to empower parents about through sharing on social media. So I'm super not into like really elaborate Pinterest play invitations. I feel like they're just way over the top for parents with their energy. Some parents are super into them. Great, that's awesome. You know, like go and set up this amazing little small world play or whatever with your kid. You know, that's totally fine if that's what fills your cup. But if you are a tired parent who just want your kid to go over there and play for a while, setting up a huge, massive Pinterest invitation to play is not sustainable long term for you as a parent. And that's what I mean about we need to have like a real holistic view of this, because parents are tired.
Yeah.
And it's not sustainable for a lot of parents to be going and just kind of like setting up this huge elaborate play invitation.
Yeah. And it gets expensive.
So I'm more about the simple play. So getting to beyond just a random activity and thinking about what your children are actually enjoying at that moment in play, identifying their play schema. So that's a developmental urge that they're showing in their play. Like it might be carrying things around in containers, or it might be like transporting things from here to there, or it might be like throwing things. And, you know, that can be a trigger for a lot of parents.
Yeah.
But actually using that to build a extension on play, and I mean by build, I mean just kind of like build on your children's play, not like actually build something, but extend your children's play so that they can get into a flow of play and they can get into a really nice space with their play, with being independent in it, and then you can go and have your cup of coffee. Like I feel that's really where we need to be meeting parents at with this type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so can you give our listeners an example of what a play invitation, a very simple, holistic play invitation would look like or might look like?
Yeah, sure. So you might notice that your child is like obsessed with wheels. Okay, so you might think, okay, so how can I extend this invitation? How can I extend this obsession for my child? So you might have a lot of toy cars at home. All right, cool. So you could just dump the toy cars out on the floor and expect your child to go and play with them. All right, maybe they do. But in order to make it really inviting, what you might do instead is you might put out a piece of material. And then you might put a block underneath the piece of material, and then you might put another block on top. So the block underneath is like a ramp, and then the block on top is going over that, like a mountain, a bridge going over a mountain or something like that. And then you put one car on top of the ramp, and so they kind of like hopefully will engage with that, and then they will create their own play through that.
And
going forward.
And maybe even like if they watch you do that, then they might even imitate you by putting more blocks under and more on top.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just one kind of really simple explanation or example. You know, there are so many different ways to extend on our children's play, and we don't need to make it hard. You don't need to go out and buy all the fancy resources, because I'm super not into that. I just am very much about parents using what's already in their home and what's already sustainable for them to actually do.
Yeah.
I remember you'd shared your little outdoor mud kitchen, which I absolutely love. I have had my eye on one of those for a long time, even before Trip was born. And I was telling my dad, I was like, Dad, I need you to build me an outdoor mud kitchen so we can have a lot of sensory play, a lot of these experiences. And my dad is like, he's not even going to use it for like 3 years. I'm like, 3 years? He's going to be using it by the time he's a year old, you know? By the time he can stand, he's going to be playing in the mud kitchen, so get started building it now.
Jeez. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, my little girl, she's 11 months old. She can crawl and she can pull the stand. And she crawls over there and she pulls the stand and she puts her hands in the water.
Exactly.
That's perfect. It. So can you tell us what you mean by toy rotations?
Yes, absolutely. It's just a simple tool that you can have in your parenting toolbox. So you don't need to make it hard. I basically call it to just shove a whole lot of toys in the cupboard.
There you go.
So it's really quite clear that kids play better when they have less in the visual environment for them.
Yes.
You know, so when we have all of our toys out in the lounge or the playroom or whatever, I feel like it's very overwhelming for children and they find it hard to focus, and it's actually making their play more complicated than it needs to be. So get a lot of those toys, and if you can, shove them in a cupboard somewhere or put them in a box in the garage or above the wardrobe or whatever. Put them in containers or whatever works for you. And then just have a few play resources out in your lounge or the playroom or whatever. And it will help your child to really settle into play because it's less overwhelming for them to choose what they're going to play with. And then on a rainy day or when you are feeling like absolutely exasperated as a parent and they're like, let's have an iPad or let's have the TV, you know, because that happens. Yeah. It's really hard to deal with. Then you can go, oh, hang on a minute, let's choose something from the cupboard. And you go to the cupboard and you pick out something with your child, lift them up so they can see it, and then hopefully they'll settle into play.
Oh, again, for sure.
In a happier manner.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that before as well, and have seen like a research study about how children learn better with less toys and how it also helps to improve attention.
Absolutely, because they are able to just kind of focus on that one thing and not be so distracted all the time.
And I mean, I think about that as adults. It's like,
I was literally gonna say the same thing.
You know, if we're sitting at, you know, our kitchen table and our kitchen table is a mess, we can't focus on anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say this to parents as well, you know, we have to remember that for our children, play is their work. What does their workspace look like?
Yes.
What does the playroom look like? What does the play space in the lounge look like? You know, do we focus well when we've got a really messy desk? I know some people can, but, you know, personally I can't.
No.
You know, when we reduce those visual distractions in our environment, in our work environments, it can be really helpful. So thinking about it as in our children, what does their play space look like? What does their workspace look like? And really valuing that and being respectful of that and just changing it up for them every now and again, or removing all those toys and setting up a simple toy rotation, can be really powerful.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, I even think as an adult, we are on our computers and we have, or our phones, and we have 37 different tabs open.
Oh, yes.
I can't get anything done. I have like tab ADD where I'm like, oh, I need to go check that tab and that tab and that tab.
And anytime I look at your computer and you have all those tabs open, I'm like, close your freaking tabs. Get out of there.
I'm very guilty of that.
Yeah, and then it makes your computer run slower.
Yep.
It's exactly. Not good. I do like the toy rotation idea, and I've definitely used that as a suggestion to parents who have said that their child struggles to play with toys or their child's not attending to toys. And I'm like, okay, well, clean up all the toys and bring out like two, and then the next day put those two toys away, bring out a different toy, you know?
Yeah. And what I love about it as well is that it reduces the overwhelm of tidying up as well, you know?
Because, yes.
How hard is it when you've got all the toys out and everything needs to be put away versus when you only have, like, two different sorts of play resources out, you know, like magnetic tiles and cars, for example, you know?
Yeah.
It's so much easier to tidy up. And, again, it just reduces the stressor for the parent and the child, and it creates a more harmonious environment rather than being stressed out about all these toys around the place, you know, because that's another layer, you know, coming in there, reducing the stressor for the parent is massive.
Oh,
massive.
Absolutely.
I'm even thinking back to like all the pictures I have of my son when he was, you know, learning to play with toys. And there was definitely a period where we just dumped all the toys out on the floor. And I've got pictures where there's like Legos and blocks and books and cars and stuffed animals. There's just crap everywhere. And now, as like a 6-7 year old, he kind of still does that a little bit, where he'll get out some toys, he'll play with them for a while, and then he'll just leave them there, and then go get the next set of toys and leave them there. And, you know, of course, as I've, you know, gone on my learning journey of how to help him better, I'm like, oh, that's probably why he does that, because that's how his play area always was when he was little. And so now having to teach him, like, okay, well, if you're done with your Legos, put your Legos away before you get out your slime, or put your slime away before you get out your books or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I feel like just being able to identify that and just remembering that the early years are super important in being able to create great connections for our kids in their brains, and just modeling and helping them to learn all that kind of stuff early is so important, hey?
Yeah, for sure.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's so hard. I wanted to go back just really briefly to like how you can start decreasing screen time, and like say your child watches TV in the morning and then again like after lunch and then again before bed, and maybe like some ideas of how to decrease all that screen time.
Yeah, great question. So I really try to talk with parents about sitting down and looking at what their current routine, their day looks like or their week, and identifying those times when they do have screen time for their kids, and just picking one time. So, you know, we don't want to create a huge goal for ourselves that we're going to cut screen time out completely or cut it back to only 30 minutes if we're currently having 4 hours a day. Like, it's not going to work so well, and it's going to be quite stressful for the parents. So really just starting off with a gentle transition for yourself and your family, talking about it with your parenting partner as to what time you want to actually either reduce or completely cut back, recognizing that you might want to keep one of those times because it's actually going to make your life easier, for example, in the afternoon or before school is a very common one. And so just picking one time and having that as your first goal to reduce is really, really a good start.
Okay, I've got a question. What do you suggest when one parent is on board with reducing screen time and the other parent maybe doesn't recognize it as an issue, or they aren't, that's not a meaningful value to them to reduce screen time? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's tough to navigate.
Yeah, super tough to navigate and super common. I get this question quite a lot, and I really come back to the fact that there are different stages to change. You know, when we look at the psychological stages of change, there will be people who are more ready for change versus people who aren't. And it's really hard to move somebody to a stage where they're ready to change if they're not even ready to look at it yet. So it can create quite a lot of tension in the home between parenting partners, and also with grandparents as well, because that's a common one that comes up too. So my advice is to discover your own personal reason why you would like to have less screen time in the home. So looking at the evidence, looking at the research, or even just kind of like something that's really on your heart that you know to be true as to why you want to have less screen time, being really clear about that and then communicating it to your parenting partner or the children's grandparents, like, hey, this is the reason why we need to reduce the screen time, or this is the reason why I really feel called to reduce the kids' screen time. It might be because they will have less screen time meltdowns, their behavior will probably be better if you have less screen time. Whatever resonates for you, and then being really clear about that, communicating it with your partner, maybe sending them some videos or research articles or tagging them on my Instagram. What
is hint, hint.
So that it kind of like moves them further along their readiness to change cycle. And then eventually they will get to the point where they are ready to make change. Believe me, I will give you hope in that, that they will. But it is a long process for some people just to move along that stages of change cycle. And recognizing that and actually being like, oh, right, okay, so that's the reason why. They're just not open to change yet. I can help them along by modeling, by giving them some more information, by getting clear on my reason why and communicating that really frequently. That can really help.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like approaching it from a positive standpoint versus like, here's what we're going to do. This is the only way to do it, instead of being like, hey, here's my thoughts. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. And recognizing that it's a huge lifestyle change, as I said before, it affects everybody in the family, you know, like they might be feeling like they don't want to make change because they are scared that it will cut into their own time that they need to de-stress or relax, or they might just be like a bit overwhelmed by the thought of it. They, you know, might just like, well, you know, if the kids aren't watching TV at this time, then what are they going to do instead, you know? So having those conversations and pointing out when the kids aren't playing well without TV or an iPad, you know, really, really just being like positive about it, like you said before. Yeah,
I was even thinking as you just said that, you know, being very positive with your kids when they're playing and just giving them a lot of positive feedback when they're playing with their toys.
Yes, absolutely. And I talk a bit about this with parents as well, like, and being able to transition away from screen time and also being right there with your kids in play, because a big barrier for parents is that they don't feel like they want to play with their kids all the time, which is totally fair enough. Like I said before, the huge goal is independent play for your kids. And one way you can do that is recognizing their need for connection straight after screen time. So communicating that with them and being there for them and helping them to regulate again after they've been on screen time. And you do that by being alongside in play. And then you can respectfully say to them, hey, I noticed that you've done this in your play. I love that tower that you built. I'm just going to go off and do some dinner prep now. I've just got a quick job to do. I'll be back in 5 minutes. And then you can show me what else you've done in the play. I'm really excited to see that. And then you come back in 5 minutes' time. That's very important.
Like, keep your word. Yeah,
but keep your word and say to them when you get back, wow, look at what you've done during that time that I've been away. Can you tell me more about that? And being interested in their play, but, you know, you don't have to be right there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm just like, I'm learning so much, and I feel like it's so simple, but you have to consciously put effort into these strategies in order for them to actually work, which I think that's where we lose a lot of people.
Totally.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what I mean about it's so multi-layered, you know, there's so much more to it than just turning off the TV or taking away the iPad. It's about attachment, it's about connection, it's about love languages. How does your child feel loved? Do they respond best by you being there, or do they respond best by having, you know, physical touch, a massage or something like that? It's energy from us as parents, you know. It is a lot more energy to live a screen-light lifestyle. But on the flip side of that, it's less energy to have to deal with the screen time meltdowns, and it's actually really rewarding because you will see your child play more, and that is just the best thing to observe ever.
Totally.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, I have two things. First one, I think it's important too to remember that, like, it's going to be hard before it gets better.
Yes,
it does. It is hard. It's very hard, you know. And, you know, we have had times in my family, you know, like, we've got four kids. We have times when we have more screen time because there's hard stuff going on in the family. And I know that it's going to be hard when we pull that screen time back again. And I have to, like psychologically gear myself up for it.
Yeah.
So having that mindset of like, you know, it is hard, but we can do it as parents, is really, really important to recognize. Yeah.
Yeah. The second thing I was going to ask, which is a little bit off topic, but you mentioned love languages, and I'm super interested in that. So I was wondering what your love language is.
Oh gosh, I feel like it's changed as I've gone through my mothering years.
Probably,
you know?
Yeah, I bet.
I used to be super, gifts. I was very much into the gifts, you know, but now I'm all about the acts of service.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Yes, that's right. Definitely mine too.
Yours is acts of service. That makes sense.
That, and I'd say physical touch too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm physical touch and quality time.
Yes. How do we get our kids' love languages figured out?
Yeah, so on the Love Languages website, there's a little blurb about this.
Oh, okay.
And I would love to say it's an easy quiz that you can do, but it's not. It's actually asking your kids how they think that mom and dad love them.
Oh, wow. That's deep.
Mm.
I haven't actually done that for Logan. Need to do it with Logan for sure.
Yeah, I did it with my kids recently. I just sat down, we were in the car actually, and we were just talking about it and our giant people mover because we've got four kids. And it was interesting what I came back with. You know, they're like, well, we know you love us because you cook us meals, Mom. And we know you love us because you take us to places. And we know you love us because you give us a big hug all the time. You know, and so that's also showing their love languages, because it's lots of different examples. There's physical touch, there's quality time, there's acts of service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm doing it tonight.
Let's put a link in the show notes to this website. So for anyone listening who wants to do that quiz, they can, and they should definitely like tag us on Instagram, you, Rachel, and us as well, and tell us, you know, what love language they all are. Cause I think that would be so interesting to see.
I'm super curious what my kids gonna say.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And for your little kids, you know, who might not be able to tell you that kind of stuff yet, it's really about observing and trying different things and being quite aware of what they respond to. You know, I think it's pretty obvious when you've got a child who's really into physical touch.
Totally.
Yeah, definitely. And the sensory system comes into play a lot in those love languages as well.
Totally. Yeah, it really, really does, doesn't it?
Gosh, so many good things.
Well, I feel like we got all of our, you know, deepest questions answered here, and we can probably wrap everything up. But do you have any, I mean, you've given us so many nuggets of wonderful information, but if you could leave our listeners with your one piece of advice, just this gem of information, what would it be?
Oh, right. Yeah. I guess I would just say to be encouraged, you know, like it's really a hard journey, and it's something that we're all navigating as parents, but be encouraged that we can actually make meaningful change in our families' lives. And it's really amazing when you see the results of that.
Yes. It's awesome. That. How can people find you and talk with you and connect with you?
Yeah, so you can jump onto my website, and I've got lots of free downloads on there that you can download to get you started on your journey to less screened, or you can just follow me on social media, and I'd love to connect with you all.
And you have courses too, right? Or you have a course?
Yeah, I do have an e-course, and I'm also just about to launch some group coaching programs.
Woohoo!
Through this time.
Oh, good. Well, we will make sure that we link everything in the show notes so people can find you and just soak up all of your resources, because everyone should. And,
yes.
And we'll make sure that it's easy for everyone.
Thank you, lovelies. It's been so good to be able to chat about this. And, you know, I just feel really passionate about supporting parents in this area. And with realistic, practical advice, it's so needed, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. I know I've learned something, Jessica.
Oh, for sure.
You have too. And we we just appreciate you taking the time out of your Saturday.
Yeah, your Saturday. There's a day ahead of us.
To chat with us.
Saturday morning, I'm off to go and have another coffee now.
Oh, good.
I love it.
You deserve it.
All right, my dear. We will chat with you later, okay?
Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Yeah.
Of course. Yep. Bye, Rachel.
All right, you guys, we hope that you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did. I feel like we say this with every interview, but we loved her. Yes. We loved her conversation. All the links for her social media, her website, her courses, her coaching, they're all in the show notes, so make sure you check it out.
And don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. Spread the love of our podcast. That is how we reach more families, more therapists, and more people like you listening. And we are so appreciative of all of your reviews.
All right, you guys, go have a great day.
Okay, bye. One last reminder, this episode was sponsored by Harkla, our newest favorite sensory product company. With less opportunity for movement in today's virtual world, and with how much we love obstacle courses, this company is the perfect place to shop for equipment to set up bomb obstacle courses.
Okay, so if you're unfamiliar with obstacle courses, let's give you an example. You can use Harkla's indoor therapy swing, and your child can swing on their stomach to gather an item such as a puzzle piece. Then climb out and jump across a pillow bridge while in their Harkla sensory body sock and place their puzzle piece on the board, then do a wheelbarrow walk. Super simple, super fun, and so many benefits.
So if you guys are ready to check them out, go to harkla.co, that's harkla.co /sensory, sensory, and you can save 10% on any of their products by using the code sensory.
We will link this in the show notes in case it's easier for you to have it in writing, and that's it.
We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. Only reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.